News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8.07. Well, some of our favorite subjects all meshed into one story. That's exciting. So we'll talk to Rob Hulbert with Lanyap 8:35 this morning. Now a story coming out that ties Alabama Power very closely to the Flock cameras, all things.
Mm-hmm.
Like what? Yes. We know about Alabama Power and the data centers, the arrangement, for instance, the one in Stockton, the arrangements they already had with the data centers all squared away before anybody could protest in any way.
Yeah, know what was going on.
Right, right. Yeah. So anyway, now this story breaks. It was broken by a smaller newspaper in Alabama.
Yeah, it was actually, I was behind the ball on this one. I started hearing about it this week, but I was a good month behind because the Alabama Gazette broke this back at the very end of July about Alabama Power marketing Flock camera systems to municipalities using their vast power pole infrastructure. And that's the part of the lead story in Lanyap, the cover story this week. They go in on the Flock cameras. So not to keep you the whole hour on that, but we'll talk with Rob Hulbert when he joins us just after 8:30 and discuss what they put two of their best reporters on this one, both Kyle Hamrick and Scott Johnson combining to write this story. So you can imagine they dug in and found some really interesting things about these camera systems, these license plate readers across the country. I also wanted to mention this, and maybe we can talk about this more too, as we yesterday, remember, had a guest on representing the Consumer Energy Alliance. And that's an alliance of companies and people. And those companies do include big oil, like Chevron, but it also includes a bunch of chambers of commerce across the Gulf. And I asked him, you know, what do you think about Alabama Power promising that data center costs won't be passed down to consumers? Because Alabama Power has made that promise. He seemed to be fully buying the what Alabama Power is putting out there about it. Didn't you get that sense yesterday, Dan? He was kind of like, well, you know, there's no reason to believe that they won't, that they will pass that cost down to consumers.
He
seemed to be on board with that. Well, look at this. And going the opposite way of passing it on to consumers, the Tennessee Valley Authority, which is the electric company for a lot more people upstate, you know, closer to the Tennessee line. They announcement yesterday, they are raising electricity rates for data centers by about 10%. And they say that is to prevent residential customers and small businesses from absorbing the costs of their growing power demands. And that increase will begin relatively soon. October 1st is when they will begin phasing in a 10% surcharge to data centers for power over three fiscal years for new and existing facilities, including data centers in North Alabama. New or expanding centers requiring more than 5 megawatts will also pay a capacity commitment charge to help fund needed power system improvements. TVA, when they made this announcement, said the plan supports the White House's ratepayer protection pledge. And that calls for tech companies and other major electricity users to finance the energy and water infrastructure they require. This is interesting, too. Data centers already account for nearly 20% of the Tennessee Valley Authority's industrial electricity load.
Wow.
And regional demand is expected to double by 2030. So at that point, they'll be knocking on about half of their electricity consumption going towards these data centers. I'll see if it'll be interesting to see if Alabama Power tries to match them and says, yeah, we too will be raising rates on data centers for the electricity they consume. But I haven't heard anything on that just
yet. Wow. Okay. All right.
So, so we'll get into that more.
It's so fast moving and so there's just, you know, it's probably all of this is accelerated, I believe, by the accelerated capabilities of AI.
Mm-hmm.
Like AI is moving at such a...
Which is accelerating the needs.
It's accelerating the needs of it all, right? Mm-hmm. And then AI is mind-blowing in some of the things, research that they're getting done. And you may benefit from this.
health-wise or medically here very, very soon, depending on how things get stamped by the government.
Yeah, 251-343-0106, and we'll get to text, and also we have plenty to talk about in international news as well. But quickly, want to check in with a new voice on FM Talk 106.5. Did a fantastic job last Friday on the call for UMS Wright football alongside his other man in the booth with him there, Coach Kevin Raley. But joining us now, Coach Michael Knapp with UMS Wright. Hey, Michael, great to have you on this morning.
Yeah, man, good to be here. It was a fun game last Friday night. Mm-hmm. It started so badly for us. You know, we just dug such a big hole, got down 28-0 in the second quarter, and then really, really kind of dominated the game after that point. Just too big a hole to climb out of. Ended up dropping that first one on the road, 42-35. But man, really excited about what was kind of a prime time matchup this week against Mountain Brook coming into Cooper Stadium tomorrow night. Just two schools that have never played, despite years and years of being at the top of athletics in the state. We've never played in football, so it's a fun one for the community, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned that comeback. That was impressive. Were you happy with how UMS kept their heads on their shoulders even after falling behind by four touchdowns, and then to kind of they got halfway there in the comeback before the half? That certainly set them off right for the second half.
You're right. It was a kind of some fireworks at the end of the first half to even get back in it. But then I thought that momentum carried into the second half. Look, anytime you show some resiliency and some toughness in a game where it looks like it's about to get away from you, and then by the end of it, you have a chance to – you need one more possession to recover one more onside kick to have a chance to tie it. I think that's something you can build on. I think that's something that shows the toughness and the mindset of the kids, that they believe they're going to win every game. And even if they get down early, they think they're going to win the game. So I think that's I think it was impressive to watch.
Coach, Dan Brennan here. I was a little busy at the time. I was down to Gulf Shores during our game on UTV 44. Fowler and Ty Mabry, they connected for three touchdowns. Do you think that – I mean – UMS, did they discover something offensively during the course of the game, or had trouble getting going?
Well, it's Ty Mabry actually had four touchdowns.
Wow.
Ty Mabry caught four touchdown passes. Max ran in the fifth one. Ty's a really impressive player out on the field. He's 6'6". He's 210 pounds. He runs really, really well. I mean, he kind of caught fire on the recruiting trail in the spring and summer for a kid that had single-digit catches last year as a junior and now has all these offers to, a bunch of schools in our area.
Interesting.
And then to have the performance he had Friday night, did we find something? I would say definitely what we've been seeing in practice and the kind of the thought of how that connection was going to develop. Definitely saw it come into full fruition Friday night, and something teams are going to have to definitely account for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet you that Mountain Brook's got he circled on their chart right now.
Somebody on their field's wearing his number this week, right?
That's correct. But is he 6'6 and 220 pounds?
No, he's not.
Probably not.
On that scout team, probably not.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to what should be an explosive matchup tomorrow night, and hopefully folks can make it out to the game and that home game. But if not, you now know that you can hear every UMS Wright game this year on FM Talk 106.5 with the pregame beginning at 6:30, I thought you guys did a fantastic job last week in what they're calling week zero, and looking forward to tuning in tomorrow night, Michael.
Game two, but week one. Yeah, we'll be here. Thanks, Dalton.
Yeah, we'll see you in a couple of weeks, because we've got your matchup against St. Michael will be on UTV 44.
Okay.
So the game's going to be all there.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks again, Michael. Congratulations. A great job on Friday night from everything I hear. So we'll look forward to tomorrow night.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right. Again, pregame begins 6:30 tomorrow night right here on FM Talk 106.5, and then kickoff at 7 o'clock, UMS and Mountain Brook. Oh, a lot going on in the world right now, and a lot of talk about the CIA director's trip to Moscow.
Yep.
Sources say, sources are telling us that the reason he went was, and you always have to parse through that information very skeptically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the CIA's trip, and probably CIA sources leaking to well-known media organizations. So not really sure why Ratcliffe went out there. They said it was to discourage Russia from acting militarily on any NATO member to test NATO's resolve. But keep in mind, there's something else going on, too, and that's in the Middle East. You've got a few things on that, Dan.
Yeah, I've kind of got a summary, I guess you would say, earlier in the week. Trump announced last week that he was going to subject Iran to unprecedented economic pressures. That's kind of the way they're going now.
What do they call it? Operation Economic Fallout or something like that.
People are saying that's because Epic Fury has not been a success. But in a write-up from Breitbart the other day, it points out that Epic Fury has done, you know, it's not ended things, but it's definitely done a lot of the things that it was out to do in terms of degrading Iran militarily. But also between 2019 and 2021, Trump directed the implementation of maximum pressure campaign against Iran as well back then. So this is designed to really, really make it make it clear. Like, you're either going to do business with them, and then there's no business with us. Well, everybody's lining up, of course, to do business with the U.S.
Right.
For almost uniformly, obviously. So that's one aspect of this. On the other side, Iran, their president says, this isn't affecting us in the least. Now, they're, you know, of course, we don't have access to exactly what's going on in Iran. That's the kind of nation it is, especially here at wartime. So there's no, I don't know that you can verify, but it looks like things are really, really in tough shape in the country of Iran right now, economically, supply chain wise, just existing, I guess you would say. One leverage point that they may have now is far from U.S. warships, enforcing a blockade at the mouth of the Persian Gulf. Nearly 40 million barrels of Iranian crude are sitting aboard tankers in waters near Malaysia, east of Singapore. So they've got all these, all this crude.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a matter of, can they access it and do something with it? So that's kind of a concern. And again, you know, we're getting all kinds of like back and forth announcements from Iran. The story was that Trump is now saying, or the administration is saying, that they cleared the Strait of Hormuz of all the mines and all of that, and they're in good shape. It's like they're in command. Mm-hmm. Iran was talking the other day like they were going to do that along with Oman. Right?
Oman, yeah, and also said that Iran and Oman, I guess if they team up, that they're going to be the two sharing in the spoils of ships that are transiting the Strait of Hormuz, which the U.S. and allies would not like that one bit. So you're right, a lot of conflicting information out there. And one thing Trump keeps mentioning that I think gets glossed over is when he says, you know, we don't really even know who to talk to. And I know he's kind of putting on airs sometimes when he's speaking to the press, or a lot of the time when he's speaking to the press. But it has to be somewhat truthful, right? I think part of the problem is we were too good at decapitating all or most of the leadership of Iran.
Yeah, they're so fractured, right?
And really left them without someone who both would be willing to take the bull by the horns and start operating Iran in a way that the United States would like to see Iran operated. But they also have to be someone powerful enough to control all the other factions in Iran.
Yeah.
And right now it seems like what Afghanistan seemed like after, you know, decapitating the Taliban leadership over there, where you just have a bunch of different warring factions with all different ideas set on how Iran should proceed, which makes it incredibly difficult to get them to act right or to come to any sort of agreement.
So true. I mean, it's so fractured over there, and you have, you know, like you say, you have people, you have factions that are basically warring with each other for the ultimate power in Iran. Is anybody actually establishing that they've got the power?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that has been a tough task for us to try to get a straight answer out of them. The president of Iran is, you know, he'll
Pezeshkin, is that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, he puts out statements every now and then, but he, at best, is probably the fifth most powerful person.
He was already toothless, you know, previously with the elder Khamenei still alive.
Yeah.
Trump, again, yesterday, maybe that's what this is, Iran cooling their jets and waiting for the younger Khamenei to recover. Trump, again, yesterday said he believes that the new supreme leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, remains alive after being severely wounded in an airstrike. So Maybe that's the real decision maker, and they weren't making that up these last few months.
822, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. More Mobile Mornings straight ahead.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Speaking of that text line, Dan and Dalton, going to respond to some of those texts right now.
We are. And I also want to let you know, you want to stay tuned the rest of the hour, because we're going to give away a family four-pack of tickets, not now, but soon, to the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo, which is coming up the weekend of September 11th through the 13th, a family four-pack, and these tickets are good for all weekend. And we at FM Talk 106.5 are fired up for the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo coming that second weekend in September, so stay tuned if you want to win a family four-pack to that. Now, back to the text line, as Dan said, Matthew texting in says, the real question is, who is more quote-unquote alive at the moment, Senator Mitch McConnell or the leader of Iran, Mojtaba Khamenei? Great question, and I haven't seen any headlines popping out recently. Have we gotten an update on McConnell? Because I haven't seen any in a long time.
I think the answer is no.
And I know that the governor of Kentucky, who's a Democrat, so he has reason to push, and I think more Republicans should be pushing for more public information too, but Bashir has really been pushing hard to get some kind of update on his true health. But remember, I got in a little trouble when he first was hospitalized, McConnell. I mentioned we were talking with Quinn about Darlene Graham, and at the time where it seemed like Graham was just going to be appointed to fill her late brother's role in the Senate until his term ended.
Right, just to go ahead and vote the way he would have voted on things.
Right, and things changed there. She's now the Republican nominee and will likely hold that seat.
Yep.
But I said, you know, what's worse, having someone who doesn't have any previous Senate experience in there and voting, or having senators and members of Congress not show up to vote because they're either incapacitated or just don't want to do their job? And in McConnell's case, it's clearly that he's incapacitated, but we've seen him for years not just struggling with his health publicly, but in some of the most egregious ways. I mean, moments where it looks like he's truly having strokes on camera and completely loses train of thought and they have to usher him off. And we talked about this when Biden was in office. It, in many ways, seems to amount to elderly abuse. And McConnell probably wants to still be in the mix. But
can he make that decision on his own? And I mean, I get what you're saying. Did you see recently I guess she was on a podcast, Jill Biden, her assertion that Joe may have been drugged?
Well, remember,
before the big debate?
I think they did drug him. They were trying to pep him up before the debate. I don't know if she was arguing that he was given downers or something like that, and that's why he was so out of it. Yeah. But remember, the reports were, and I don't think that's anything new for presidential candidates on the national, or the president in that case, on the national stage like that, but giving them a little bit of speed of some sort, whether it's legal or not, to get them going when they're on live TV. But they're still coming up with excuses for that.
Yeah, that's awfully risky, because if your demeanor or your pattern or your thought pattern is going to change, speeding you up if you're at this point don't have a whole lot left in your brain anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's just speeding up a dumbass. You're not really doing anything to enhance his ability to communicate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's just hyped up. But I think it was, I didn't read the whole story, but I did see where she made that assertion that but it's not off the table that Joe, that somebody drugged him before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what?
Well, in the Biden family, you could see what they're doing as Hunter gets into position by making the rounds on podcasts and gaining fandom through his social media presence. He's definitely gaining new fans, I hate to tell you. But he, I think, clearly has a political future in mind. And at the same time, he and his mother, or he and Jill, Dr. Jill, are setting up the victim that President Joe Biden was the victim through all of this.
Yep.
Could see those tea leaves kind of rounding into place.
Yeah, Hunter not quite far to the left, like the party has gone. That's something he needs to address. It's 8:30.
Stay on top of big news and the local beat with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
What's going on? Dan and Dalton, 8:35 on Mobile Mornings with Rob Hulbert from Lanyap Mobile joining us as he does on Thursdays at this time. And lots to peruse through if you grab a Lanyap.
Certainly, just as there is every week. Good morning, Rob. Thanks for coming on.
Morning, guys. How are y'all?
We're good.
We're good.
You can imagine my excitement when I see the cover story in this week's Lanyap written by not one, but two fantastic investigative journalists, Kyle Hamrick and Scott Johnson. You said, hey, Flock cameras, they're all the rage right now in discussions across the area, and dive in, and boy did they, Kyle and Scott. Good stuff here on the explosion of the Flock camera discussion around the Gulf Coast and the rest of the country, really.
Yeah, we thought, you know, well, I see cameras everywhere. I'm like, are those Flock cameras? Let's find out what we've got going on.
Mm-hmm. I think we lost Rob already. Let's see. Rob, can you hear me right now? I know we've been having some cell phone issues. There we go. Hey, Rob, sorry. We lost you there for a minute, right when you were about to start explaining.
I'm sorry, guys. Winding my way through. Hopefully I'll get to a decent cell tower here. No. But I said we have some Flock cameras in Mobile, but we don't have a tremendous amount of that particular type of camera, but we have cameras all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
What they're for is really still kind of, nobody really wants to say what they do, but a lot of them, you know, some of it's related to ShotSpotter still. Some of that stuff. Now, in Baldwin County, there are a lot more Flock cameras.
Really?
Gulf Shores in particular.
Oh, yeah.
They have far more over there.
Mm-hmm.
There are cameras at a lot of major intersections around town, and, you know, what they're tracking is kind of difficult to tell exactly.
Mm-hmm.
People don't really want to say exactly what they're doing with them, but... You know, the question of what happens, that's really the bigger issue. And I don't know, you know, it's kind of hard to me to say, well, we want this for law enforcement purposes, but we don't want anything else to happen with it. Because, I mean, that unfortunately seems to be the case a lot of the time.
Yeah. And it's about what guardrails municipalities and states put in place for the collection of this information. And right now, for most of the nation, there don't seem to be many guardrails or guardrails that were approved without the general public knowing in a lot of cases. And it seems like everyone right now, with both Flock cameras and data centers, trying to catch up and feel like they're where their communities are ready for what's already here.
Yeah, we live in a very digital age. We are being watched all the time. You know, I'm still getting my feed is still full of Western shirts from before the nappies when I looked for a Western shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's paying attention to you.
Yeah.
You know, on top of that, I think, you know, the stories that we've been reporting about the hijacking of these wrecks, people have wrecks, and all of a sudden these folks are calling them about insurance stuff and come in and having medical care. Somebody in the system's getting them that information. I mean, it's happening somehow or another. That information, which is supposed to be, you know, kept just for law enforcement, is mm-hmm. getting out. You know, so these are issues that people, you know, we've seen it across the country. You know, people use them to track girlfriends or people they're interested in or people, you know, they know. So that I think that's where people freak out about it, but I don't know what the answer to it is.
Right.
You don't want
to get rid of them completely.
You don't want to give me that opportunity. There'd be women all over the Gulf Coast complaining about me. So there's a map now. It's a website that kind of tells you where these cameras are.
Or does it?
Right.
I mean, I guess, but, you know, are you going to zigzag all over town to avoid the cameras?
yeah.
I guess if you're worried about being seen, then that might be the case. I don't know what, I mean, most of us are probably just driving along, you know, and thinking, well, I don't, you know, it doesn't really matter to me because I'm not doing anything illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I don't know.
There is a level of surveillance that we all feel like we all feel it.
I think it'd be to the website just to take a look at where these cameras. You know, just curiously, where are these cameras? How many are out there? You know.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, you know, I think we counted up a bunch of them, and there are a lot of cameras all over the place. And I mean, the city just bought new drones for surveillance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where does surveillance end? That's the real question.
And I think,
we do a lot of things in the name of safety.
And with Flock cameras kind of becoming the predominant company that people are discussing here, and we've been talking about this all week. We talked about it last week, too. To me, it seems like because Flock cameras look different than the rest of them do. I mean, they're very Darth Vader-ish and much more visible than a lot of the previous
menacing
license plate readers that have been around. And that has people, certainly, I think, at the very least, on edge. And in a lot of these sites and on social media where journalists who are social media journalists and not that that's a bad thing. I mean, it is a community thing to let people know what's going on, but I think they're a little overzealous in determining what cameras are or aren't and what they're doing without actually being able to look into it, like Scott and Kyle were able to. But it's still a big issue, and I want to get your thoughts on this argument. Squirrel Vereen, and I think it's a very valid argument, he says people are getting worked up about those cameras for doing what social media already does. They record car stickers, faces, words, but everyone keeps pumping their data into the TikToks and Face Spaces. I get upset when I'm on these pages that are like bad drivers of Mobile or Baldwin County, and you just have random users posting videos of other people, and because that person who's posting claims that this person was driving erratically or was doing something dangerous, all that is a claim, and they're putting people on blast. So social media is already doing a lot of that, Rob.
Yeah, there is. I mean, we live in this world at this point. I mean, we live in a world where you walk down the street and everybody's got Ring cameras. The concept of being in public and not being seen is a difficult one.
Yep.
And I don't love it either. It's not fun. It's not something anybody wants. But by the same token, if you said, "We'll get rid of those Ring cameras," well, I want security. We'll get rid of these cameras on the power poles. We'll get rid of them. I don't want that because I want to be able to see if people run red lights, or I want people to get, if they're being chased by the cops will be able to find them. So we sacrifice these things. We sacrifice our freedoms in some ways to have that. I don't know what the happy balance is. I don't think we're there because it seems like more and more it is just intrusive.
Yeah,
it is.
It feels out of balance.
I hesitate to look for anything online, to buy something online, because I don't want to see it for the next 3 months. It makes me crazy. It does. It's nuts. It just, the stuff keeps coming back up, and you're like, can I just buy something without it being spread throughout the internet that I bought that?
Mm-hmm. By the way,
we're doing that.
Rob, you mentioned power poles, and that now weaves its way into the discussion some, Dalton,
yeah, doesn't it? And I know it received a mention in the story, but the claims that Alabama Power has been, I don't know, if leasing out their power poles, or they're basically, the reports are bundling the ability for these license plate readers to take up space on their power poles, and they're going to municipalities and saying, hey, if you guys also want us to put up all these safety cameras around town, we can do that too. I haven't heard much of that at all until this month when rumors started popping up, but have you guys been able to look into that at all?
We asked about it. They didn't respond. It's in the story. We mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned that claim, and when we talked to Alabama Power, they just didn't respond.
Yeah,
which is not unusual.
Right,
they didn't write the call back and say, "Hey, no, that's not happening," or "Yeah, we're doing it." They just didn't say anything. So, read into that what you will.
Yeah. And if that's the case,
I read arrogance in
that. Seems out of bounds to me that Alabama Power, who so many people rely on and pay big bucks to month in and month out, and they're so closely tied into Montgomery, I mean, that just seems out of bounds if that's actually happening.
This is a different time in history, and we're going to have to really understand where we want to be with these.
Yeah.
Don't know what the answer is other than say we're going to ban them. And, you know, and law enforcement doesn't want to ban them. People, you know, cities don't want to ban them. They want that ability because of criminal activity. They want to stop criminal activity. They want to, I mean, that's what the design, they're designed for primarily. The whole concept is let's do this so we make have a safer community. It's just the abuse issues that we worry about. And also just the issue of being constantly watched.
Hey, speaking of safer communities, now it's if we there was not enough concern problems in Pritchard, now it's even down to like a messaging. They kind of got mixed up or ahead of themselves, or the council said one thing and Carletta Davis, the mayor, said another in terms of abolishing the police department and starting from scratch. And she said she met with Sheriff Birch yesterday morning, and but anyway, it's signals getting all crossed up once again.
Yeah, one day they're saying everybody's going to be put on leave. We're not sure if it's paid leave, unpaid leave, or not. And then they come back the next day. The mayor comes back and says, "Oh, that's not happening yet." So,
right,
yes, there are messaging issues. The council saying one thing, the mayor saying another. It's just more of the dysfunction that is there. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what else to say about Pritchard except it is just completely dysfunctional at this point.
Yeah.
It is the poster child for a city that is just off the rails.
It really is. And this is something we've seen, maybe not to this scale or as large a department as what needs to be in Pritchard, but in other municipalities, they've either completely disbanded or had to start from scratch. And when they disband, you know, they normally pay the sheriff's office in their county to take over that policing. But money is a real issue right now with all of this. And I know that the numbers that were put out there for what it would cost Pritchard to keep the Mobile County Sheriff's Office running things there, I think a $4.7 million initial cost for new deputies, vehicles, and other things they need. And then I think $2.2 million every year thereafter. Well, the Mayor Davis said, we have $1.5 million. That's what we're working with.
Right.
Yeah. The term blood from a turnip comes to mind. I mean, it is just, there's not a lot there, man. They don't have any money. They don't have a tax base. They don't have a lot of the things that you need to make the city run. So I don't know how they're going to pay the sheriff's office either.
Well,
it's just, I mean, it is a big, big problem, and it needs some input from the state level, I think. You know, and there's, you know, I don't want to see the city dissolved, but because that brings up a whole other group of issues, but you know, I think there's just got to be some input from the state at this point.
I was reading about other failed cities, if you want to call it that, you know, but even those examples, like Pritchard's not among them nationally, basically, because it's not a big enough place that would get that kind of attention. But even these so-called failed cities, I don't think any of them have failed to the degree that Pritchard has. It's just a smaller place, and it doesn't get the same attention. But
and so many of them, I don't know, but they might not have the same aged infrastructure that Pritchard does, which is a massive part of this entire story when you talk about the troubles they're going through.
Yeah, it's amazing. Real quick, let everybody know what to do if they would like to sign up and get Lanyap online, Rob.
I do, but I want to give you a quick plug for our book, Sinners Above All Others. It's going to be a signing. Kevin Lee's going to have a signing over at Carpe Diem on Saturday from 9 till noon. And then Wednesday, September 2nd at Callahan's from 6 to 8 with music by Phil and Foster. So
nice.
Check that out. Also, go online, lanyapmobile.com. Get signed up. Become a subscriber. Help us keep doing this work, folks.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Thanks a bunch, Rob.
Thank y'all. Have a great day.
All right. Rob Holbert, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And we have a lot of texts we want to get to as well. I did want to start this because maybe we can get some texts in before before our final segment, but someone mentioned earlier, you know, why would anyone not want these cameras? This is the text. Why would anyone not want these cameras? Talking about the license plate readers. I want cameras at every entry and exit point in Fairhope if we have the technology. Why would we not want to protect our city from Democrat criminals? And you know, we've been discussing this on Mobile Mornings for a while now, and I have to tell you, I could still hear arguments pulling me in either direction. I love that it's helping law enforcement catch criminals and find missing people. Obviously, who wouldn't want that except for criminals? But when you talk about the information that's being gathered, the questions are, you know, how much information on each person and vehicle are they actually bringing in with every little snapshot mm-hmm. that these license plate readers are taking? And I really enjoyed reading in 1819 News this week. I think it might have been posted yesterday, an opinion piece from Taylor D. Rhodes, who I believe is with the NRA. I don't know his exact title with the NRA, but makes a good argument that remember when Obama was wanting to basically build a database of gun owners, of registered yep. gun owners, and the massive pushback on that.
Yes.
And this was happening back in 2010, and I'm sure before and after that. And even to the point where in Southern California gun shows, according to this article in 2010, the Obama Justice Department drew up plans to run plate readers at Southern California gun shows, all using far less superior technology than what we have now, what Rhodes
sure.
writes here. There was
right.
an ACLU records request from that same era turned up a DEA email describing joint work with ATF on the same idea. The DEA said nothing ever came of it. Well, now here we are 16 years later, and while we're being told, and you know, South Alabama, definitely different politics than other states, but what he argues in this op-ed is they're not just taking a picture of your license plate. They're taking a picture of your vehicle, which includes your license plate, but that also includes bumper stickers and other mm-hmm. identifiable things that you have on your vehicle, which, again, it may be a vehicle you're not driving at the time.
Yeah.
Might be someone else behind the wheel. But if they can use that and say, show me every vehicle in Chicago that has an NRA sticker.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a database of what you would presume to be legal gun owners that are, that have weapons, which is exactly what so many Second Amendment, I think exactly what the Constitution forbades against. So there is a lot more to this, and you ask who exactly would be against those cameras. Well, it sounds like the NRA is starting to come out against them,
yep.
for one.
Yeah, and judging off the 2010 story, why would they not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll tell you what we're going to do right now, though. We're going to take a break, but before we do that, we want to alert you that if you want to win a family four-pack of tickets to a cool event, you can.
Yeah, and you can do so right now. A family four-pack to the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo. This is running September 11th through 13th, all weekend long, September 11th through 13th. This family four-pack, good for all weekend. It's caller number 4 at 251-343-0106. Caller number 4, this family four-pack is yours, and we'll continue to give away tickets leading up to the event. More Mobile Mornings on the way.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. The new host of, co-host, Tiger Talk Overtime, along with Josh Moon. Jeff Poor has got his show on the way.
I really enjoyed Jeff and Josh last night. Two men on opposite sides of the political aisle. And, of course, big shoes to fill with the late Doug Holton
yep.
and taking over from him. And we talked about that some yesterday in midday. And then Jeff again last night for his debut episode. But I enjoyed the two of them and their back and forth. They both share a love of Auburn athletics and the university itself. But really good discussions. And then they brought Brad Law on, who had just wrapped up an hour of Tiger Talk
yep.
live from Auburn. And it was really good. If you're an Auburn fan, if you just like hearing some sports talk, they did a fantastic job, and I'm going to be tuning in every week, or at least checking the podcast when we load that up after each week's show.
Jeff's finding his second career here, midstream.
Yeah.
Leading into sports.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's fired up about that Braves win, second in a row over the Dodgers last night.
Yep.
So I'm sure Jeff will have the energy to get through these next 3 hours of another great show that's
and
on the way.
They're both excited about the goalish era, is what we're hearing?
Yes, definitely. And more so his demeanor since taking the job and the things that he has said since he became the man, because as Josh noted last night, there was some with Auburn fans, and you could say this about so many teams, including my own that mm-hmm. I follow, Tennessee. But when you go through some really rough patches and it's year after year and you bring coaches in and they don't pan out and you're tired of working yourself up into thinking that this is going to be the team, but yep. you do it anyway and over and over and over again. But at least what Golish has done since taking over has shown that he's very meticulous in his designs for the program and very particular about what he's telling the media, and not in a hide everything he's doing kind of way, but just letting them know his exact plans. So we'll see. We'll start to find out next week when they take on Baylor in Atlanta.
He brought in a quarterback, I believe, led the nation in total offense.
Byron Brown.
Last year mm-hmm. under Golish at Central Florida. You're right. They played well in that Baylor game on the road last year. They should be just fine in Atlanta, seemed to me.
Also, a reminder to get signed up to our FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em before yeah. Saturday, September 5th. If you go to fmtalk1065.com/pick'em, all the information is there. And that does it for Mobile Mornings. Congratulations to Joel picking up that family four-pack to the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo that'll be at the grounds from September 11th through 13th that entire weekend. We'll give more tickets away as Mobile Mornings rolls on the next couple weeks. Jeff Porcio on the way next.